This episode of The Podcats is sponsored by the O-Line Sports Grill at Hurstbourne and Westport Road. Make O-Line your home for Wildcat basketball when you can't be at the game. For a free appetizer, text O-Line to 72727.
Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production.
Here's how you count to eight. 3, 2, 1. And for the eighth time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky. C-A-T-S. Champs, champs, champs.
Oh, it's a sea of blue. It's beautiful.
It's awesome.
Oh my gosh, they're crazy. They're the most dedicated fans I've ever seen.
Going blue!
C-A-T-S-K-K-K.
Go Kessler.
Let's go.
Big Blue Nation, show your Wildcat pride and band together with the Podcats. All the UK propaganda you can handle.
Welcome into another edition of the Podcats. As always, I'm Kenny Colston. Alongside me is Chris Littrell. Chris, tell everyone hello.
Hello, everybody.
There you go, as we do every week. Just want to do a quick shout out to the O-Line Sports Grill for sponsoring the Podcats. Very, very appreciative of that. You know, if you're looking for a place to watch the Kentucky game, or, you know, unfortunately there's no more NFL, college basketball in general, you know, I would suggest going out to O-Line. It's a pretty nice place out there, North Hurstbourne Lane, you know, kind of Louisville's East End. So if you don't currently have a sports bar where you like to sit there like I do, my Saturdays, I usually like plant myself at noon no matter when Kentucky plays and sit there all day. So if you don't have a place to do that, you should go to the O-Line Sports Grill. And also just thank you for sponsoring us here at the Podcats.
Sometimes you sit there all night.
Sometimes I sit there all night until they kick me out. But we're not going to go there. Not on this one. That'll be for the Louisville beer guys one time when they invite me on. Anyways, I think we've got a kind of interesting show here, Chris. Normally I would say we have a packed show. And we've had some games, and there's been some interest. I mean, Kentucky basketball beat both Mississippi schools this week. You had National Signing Day on Wednesday, so there's been some interest. But for the life of me, there's only one thing I want to talk about on my mind, and that's Florida. So we're going to talk a little bit about the past week that Kentucky basketball's had. We will touch on Signing Day, but the bulk of what I want to talk about today is Florida. So I'm just letting you know ahead of time, get your mind right for talking UK, Florida, 9 p.m. on Saturday, college game day is coming to town, because I think this is going to be the defining game of this season. But let's before we get there, let's talk about the week at hand. And win versus Ole Miss and a win at Mississippi State. Two okay victories, if you ask me. Nothing spectacular in them. I guess let's start with the first one, Ole Miss. Largely kept Marshall Henderson in check. He did get a little hot, but you only hope to contain Marshall Henderson. You're really not going to stop him from scoring, because he's just going to chuck up everything. And they've got another guy, Summers, with Ole Miss that, you know, had a pretty good game, but largely held those guys in check, and also had an amazing game from Willie Cauley-Stein. He, you know, it was one of those games where you're like, heck yeah, he's broken out of the funk again. And we're going to get to maybe that's not the case. But what are your thoughts about the past week, specifically the Ole Miss game?
Well, overall, like you said, good week for UK athletics, basketball, and football. But the two games from this week, they won the Ole Miss game the way they were supposed to win the Ole Miss game at Rupp Arena against a bad team. And they go out there and they control it and they get like a 15-point win. You're right. They did play Henderson great. He was throwing up some crazy shots and some of them started to go down. It was one of those quiet games for Henderson where he seemed like he was completely shut down to me. And then when they show his stat line, he had, you know, 16 points with a lot of time left in the second half. But overall, they were able to contain him, didn't let him get off and get his team going. And they won that game the way they were supposed to. And you're right, Willie played great. What do you have, like 17 and 10 at least?
Yeah, 18, 11, and I want to say more than five blocks, but I'm not entirely sure. I mean, it was a
six.
It was a fantastic game for Willie. I want to say it was the best game he's ever had at the University of Kentucky.
I was just going to say maybe a career game to this point. So Willie obviously was hearing some of the you know, the chatter out there about him. So yeah, great game against Ole Miss. Then go on the road yesterday, and you know, I can't really complain about the game yesterday. 10-point victory, could have won by more. Mississippi State is horrible. But, you know, 20-some games into the season with this team, with these kids on this team, we know these guys' psyche. To be able to go and just take care of business, get that road win, double-digit road win, you know, I'm not going to complain. Great game from Dakari Johnson yesterday to kind of take up where Willie kind of slacked off yesterday. But, yeah, Dakari was extremely efficient yesterday, didn't miss a shot, didn't miss a free throw, has 9 points, 8 rebounds, looked good doing it. So, you know, all in all, you know, no complaints about this week.
Yeah, I really am impressed with Dakari Johnson. You know, I don't
he is rapidly starting to become one of my favorite players on this team.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Now, he's not going to be able to get you he's not to the point yet where he's going to get you a double-double every game or even close to it. He's really not athletic enough to be a shot blocker. But, I mean, gosh, he hustles, he tries. You know, you can't fault him for effort. He's starting to show a little bit of a pretty solid offensive set. I mean, he's got some moves there. You wouldn't think so. But
he takes it strong.
Yeah, he takes it strong, and he's got a few moves. I think because he's, you know, you had Anthony Davis and Nerlens Noel, and you've got Willie. I think we're used to these, like, lean, athletic centers. Dakari's right. Your typical five. He's kind of like a DeMarcus Cousins, except he's not as good as DeMarcus was when he was at UK. But Dakari, I mean, I think he's almost – I mean, unless something miraculous happens, he'll probably start the rest of the season. I mean, he's almost cemented himself as a starter. And he's a quality player. I mean, he doesn't hurt Kentucky when he's on the floor. He's not the fastest guy. He's not the best defensively. But I don't think you say he hurts Kentucky when he's on the floor, which, you know, sans the Ole Miss game, Willie hurts you a lot of times when he's on the floor. So I think he's played a great game. You know, the Mississippi State game wasn't great for either Harrison twin. James Young got in foul trouble. It really came down to John Hood and Jared Polson. And not in terms of scoring a whole bunch, but just, you know, I think it's odd to say this because these guys are not athletic enough, but defensively helping out and also running the offense. I mean, they kind of facilitated for Randall, for Poitras, for Dakari and some of the other guys. So if not for John Hood and Jared Polson, Kentucky might take an L. You know, we didn't even see Dominique Hawkins, and I think there's a reason why you're seeing John Hood late in the season, because we all know that John Hood is far from the best player on this team athletically. John knows that. Cal knows that. Heck, it wasn't but a few weeks ago, John Calipari was talking in terms of John Hood already being practically off the team. Like, what does he want to do? Does he want to coach? I'll help him coach. You know, he was talking about John Hood's future and professional basketball. Playing it was not an option. So, but I think the reason why John Hood is playing is more of a message. I mean, don't get me wrong. He had a good three. He knows the offense. He's, you know, he doesn't – but he can't play defense against a top talent. You know, John Hood's not good enough to play significant minutes like he did against Mississippi State. But he's out there, I think, to send a message to James Young, to send Willis, Hawkins, Randall, the twins, I think everyone else. I mean, playing Hood, I think after weeks of saying it, Calipari saying, I'll play John Hood, I'll play Jared Polson, and not really playing him, he's finally like, fine, if you're going to call my bluff, I will play him and you'll sit on the bench. I mean, I think he would have played Hood even if the, you know, Andrew and James Young weren't in foul trouble. I think he would have played Hood. Based on what we saw yesterday. But, this team, you can't win significant games with John Hood playing as many minutes as he played yesterday. You just can't.
No, you can't. And he won't play those kind of minutes in a different kind of game. And you're right. I think that Coach Cal was sending a message to some guys on the team. But I also think some of it, too, with John Hood might be he's sending a message, but he's also rewarding John Hood, because I think John Hood has a reputation for being one of the hardest workers at practice. He's been around this program for 5 years now. And in a game like Mississippi State, where, you know, more than likely, I think Cal's probably confident that they're going to get the win yesterday while the game's still going on, you put John Hood in there and you give him some minutes because he's a fifth-year senior. And he probably has earned some playing time, and it's harder to pass those minutes out, you know, give them out on this team than it would be on another team. So I think it just – a lot of it might come to the fact that, you know, damn it, John Hood just deserves to get out there and play. I mean, he's good enough to be a scholarship guy at UK. He came in there yesterday, knocked down a three. You know, I mean, if he comes in and he's starting to – you know, jeopardize the win, well then, you know, you get him out of there. But I think as much as he was sending a message to some guys that on the team yesterday, I think it's also John Hood has earned those minutes.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, also the thing is Hood's not going to rattle. I mean, he's played right in all these arenas before. He's not going to rattle. You know, this is his moment in his mind. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He's not out there trying to impress pro scouts. He has almost no pressure when he comes in. So glad to see him play. Saw Willis briefly before, you know, Hood subbed in for him. It's interesting to see those guys, you know, 10-point road victory in the SEC, I guess is fine with me. I'm that fan who always wants more, you know, cats by 90. That's me. But wins. I mean, wins are – you had to have them. The wins that you had to have. Couldn't take losses. Couldn't take losses against these teams. And Ole Miss is turning out to be the third best team in the conference, beat – Missouri on Saturday, was up 15 at half and withstood a furious Missouri comeback in the second half to end up winning. I don't know what the final spread was, but that was a one-point game for at least 5 minutes in the second half there, you know, close to the buzzer. So, you know, Ole Miss seeming like the third best team in the SEC. I don't know if they'll make an NCAA appearance or not. Based on it, it depends on what else they do, but Ole Miss is a quality team.
O-Line Grill is Wildcat Central for UK basketball games on TV. Grab your friends and get to O-Line to grab a bucket of domestic beers for $9 or other game time specials like 24 wings and 2 domestic buckets for just $30. If craft beer is your thing, O-Line has several taps too. Support the podcasts and text O-Line to 72727 for a free appetizer. The O-Line Grill at Hurstbourne and Westport in Louisville's East End on the front line of UK sports.
Let's move on. Of course, now's the part where we talk about what we've practically been talking for weeks now, and that's the Florida game. Yes, there's a game on Wednesday at Auburn, 8 p.m., and I don't see any reason to talk about that game. If Kentucky does not win that game by 20 or more points, then this team doesn't deserve to make the NCAA tournament, because even Tennessee is beating South Carolina and Auburn. You know, even Texas A&M is beating Auburn by 25 points. So if Kentucky, the you know, arguably the first or definitely the second best team in the SEC, can't go down to Auburn and win by 25 points, well, there's major problems in my mind. So I don't even see any reason to talk about that game. That seems like to be a tune-up. Of course, let me clarify, I'm sure our young team will go on the road and look ahead to Florida, so it's probably not going to be smooth sailing the entire game, but I expect the final score to be representative of a 20-25 point blowout.
Agreed. I mean, Auburn's, you know, probably the worst team in the conference. You know, yeah, you're right. Let's move on. Florida. Let's talk about
so
the Gators.
Let's give me your – I've got some ideas of how this Florida game's going to go, but I want to hear what you think how this Florida game – how is Kentucky ready for it? Are they going to come to play? Are we going to see the team that fought Michigan State in the second half, that played really tight at North Carolina, that played really well against Louisville? Or are we going to see the team that we've seen the last couple weeks in conference play, which will probably get blown out by Florida, if that's the team that shows up?
Well, you want me to break it down and take it all the way to my prediction?
Yes, sir.
Okay, here we go. I agree with what you said earlier, that this is probably going to be the defining game of the season. It's probably the most important game on the schedule, because it's against the number 3 team in the country in conference. I mean, we're at the part of the season where everyone's jockeying for seeding, and it keeps us, a win would keep us alive to possibly win the SEC. So I think it is going to be the defining moment for this team, and it's going to be played at a raucous and rowdy Rupp Arena. I mean, I think the atmosphere is going to be great. But when you look at this Florida roster, man, they are loaded. I mean, Prather is a stud. Wilbekin, Patrick Young is a beast, and they've gotten better with the addition of Chris Walker. I mean, just one more guy, you know, that you add to this mix. I mean, this Michael Frazier kid, you know, second leading scorer on the team. It's going to be a tough ball game. I mean, Florida, this is probably – I'm going to say this is probably the best Florida team since their last national title. Would you agree with me there?
Yes. I mean, this Florida okay. is – I would put in a category of six teams that could win the national championship this year, largely because they have – they are loaded with seniors. I mean, Patrick Young
– he's been there forever.
Yeah, he's like an eighth-year senior, and that's not true, but he's been there a long time.
Seems like it.
Scotty Will, I can't Wilbekin. Even say Wilbekin. Yeah, he can't. He's been there for a long time as well. I mean, this is a seasoned Florida team.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they're not going to be too rattled coming into Rupp Arena. That is one thing about this team. But you know, if you want me to make a prediction, I'm going to predict that Kentucky comes out and plays great because I think this is a Kentucky team that plays, you know, to the level of their competition. I think a lot of young teams just do that, and then when they get pushed, they kick it up a notch. But I expect Kentucky to come out and, you know, take Florida's best shot. And being at Rupp Arena, I think the crowd is going to make the difference, and they're going to push the team over the hump. I think it's going to be extremely close. But I think Kentucky's going to come out of this with a win by, you know, 2 or 3 points. If you want me to predict a score, I don't know, 79-77 Cats. But I think an extremely close game and home court advantage is what gets them over the top.
You know, that's interesting. I see this, of course, this is College Game Day, which will, you know, it's the marquee game. They'll be hosting their morning show from Rupp. That's always a big turnout.
Digger.
I think, yeah, screw that guy. But anyways, Lexington will be electric. And the thing is with a young team, and we saw this with the Louisville game. We've seen this with Cal's teams. We saw this even last year when that was a bad team with the Missouri, you know, College Game Day. The crowd will put them over. That atmosphere, I think, will charge them. And they're better than last year's team. And this team does have talent. So I'm kind of the same mindset with you. I actually think this will be the best game we'll see this team play as a team. I don't know that we'll see a particular standout performance. You know, I don't know that we'll see like Randall against Louisville or Young in the second half against Louisville or even Randall against Michigan State. I hope not because, you know, you're probably not going to win with those things. I mean, maybe, but I think this will be the best team effort. I think you'll see, I was going to predict Willie playing well, but that's still a stretch for me. But I think I don't think Young will run wild on us. I'm more worried about the guards because the Harrison twins, they don't seem to play a lot of defense or box out willingly. So, but I think, you know, Florida's a good team. I could even see Florida being up by 10 at halftime, and Kentucky coming out in the second half. I don't think Florida can blow Kentucky out. I mean, I think it's a close game regardless in Rupp. Now, when we have to go to Gainesville, this Kentucky might get blown out, you know, in the O-Dome. But in Rupp, College Game Day, you know, the team knows they pretty much have to win this one if they want any hopes of winning the SEC regular season. And, you know, if they want to solidify a decent seed in the NCAA tournament. So I think all that being said, they will rise to the occasion, and I will actually predict a 6-point victory for Kentucky. I think we'll see the fruits of the labors of Michigan State and North Carolina and all those early season games pay off because Michigan State's kind of a older team as well. They're not as senior laden as Florida is. But Florida's not going to rattle. I mean, Patrick Young's played in a big game in Rupp Arena before. You know, all those guys have played in big games in Rupp Arena. But I just think Kentucky will pull this one out. If they don't, they have no shot of winning the SEC. And we're looking probably at a 4 seed at best for the Cats at that point, at best in the NCAA tournament.
Which is, I think, where they are projected right now in the most recent bracketology. I think they're a 4 seed now. When they were, a 2 there a couple weeks ago. But, yeah, I'm going to add something to what you were saying about, you know, the fruits of the Michigan State and the North Carolina game. We are going to know more about the psychological makeup of this team after this Florida game than we will have known after any other game that they've played this year. I mean, Michigan State is a quality opponent, but that was like the 3rd game of the year. I mean, North Carolina was a tough game, but that was, you know, 20 games ago. We played Louisville, you know, 5 weeks ago or whatever. This is in the heart of the season. This is against a team that's played 22, 23 games already. This is probably the most balanced team that Kentucky will face this year. Just with the addition of Chris Walker, you know, who's going to be another inside presence, and you throw him down there with Patrick Young. And Florida has another big guy whose name escapes me right now, who also is an interior player. Is it Yaget? Is that right? Is he one
something
of their
something like that? I'm not entirely sure.
Okay, but this is the most balanced team that I think Kentucky will have seen to this. Was going to see all year as far as the inside outside with the good post up guys and the guards. So this is going to be the truest test all year long, and we're going to see at the end of this game what this team's made of. You know, and hopefully we're going to be pleased. I mean, what else can you say, really?
No, I mean, yeah, it's hard to predict it. This team is still so much in flux. It's hard for me to predict what's actually going to, you know, other than broad generalities. I mean, we know what Florida is. Florida's polished. Right. Now, here's a positive going into this game. Kentucky has had what I think you could largely say is an easy streak going into this. I mean, you know, their two games preceding will be Mississippi State and Auburn, which, you know, neither one are the top eight. You know, Auburn's like the worst team in the SEC. Them and South Carolina, I guess if they play each other, we'll figure out which one's the worst. Maybe they already have. But anyways, Ole Miss is a tough team. I mean, number three in the conference, but that was kind of an easy win for Kentucky. The flip side is Florida's actually been having, I guess, quite a little bit of a tough schedule. I mean, they had they didn't cover playing Alabama over the weekend at home. Alabama, I think it was possibly tied at halftime, if I remember correctly. And, you know, Florida pulls out to like a 7-point victory. Alabama's a tough team. Then they have to go and they have to play Tennessee Tuesday night at Knoxville. And you know Tennessee's circling that game. Now that since Tennessee does not see Kentucky at their place, Tennessee's circling this as a win that would get them in the NCAA tournament. I think they're like 45 in the RPI right now. They're the definition of a bubble team. They beat Florida, they might be in. You know, they make a good run, don't lose too many games the rest of the season. So they're circling this. So Florida will get – Florida has no opportunities to rest up or to be – to take it easy going into their game with Kentucky. Kentucky, hopefully they don't – I hope everyone knows what I'm saying here, but yeah, Auburn. I mean, that's not a big threat there. You know, they could kind of implement a little things about Florida, I would think, leading into that game since it's played on a Wednesday instead of normal Tuesday. It kind of screws you out of a day. But Florida is no rest for the weary. I mean, Alabama and Tennessee, that's two tough teams in the SEC – into what is always a tough matchup with Kentucky. So there's promise there that they could be a little fatigued, a little winded. They're not going to be able to play an easy opponent going into our game.
No, and, you know, Florida's riding a 15-game winning streak right now. So they're going to be taking that into Knoxville this week. And, you know, I'm always a law of averages guy when it comes to winning streaks. You know, it's going to end at some point. And, you know, I'd rather see them go into Knoxville and have to grind out a tough win and then bring a 16-game winning streak to Rupp Arena than see them go get beat in Knoxville, because then we're going to play them after they've, you know, after they've taken a loss, their losing streak's over. It's going to give Billy Donovan an opportunity to tell them that they're not as good as they thought they were and all this, that, and the other. And I'll tell you, you know, like I said, 15-game winning streak right now. If Florida gets by these next two games at Tennessee, and then if they can beat Kentucky next week, you're looking at Kentucky having to go to Gainesville and maybe play a Florida team that's on like a 23-game winning streak, because after the UK game, things get considerably easier for Florida the rest of the way. Their toughest game is going to be at Ole Miss, and other than that, they've got Auburn, Vandy, LSU, and South Carolina. So if you don't get them now, you know, Florida is going to be like 29-2 or something when we have to play them down there. So, you know, I really hope that Florida can go to Knoxville and take care of business this week, and then let Kentucky have them riding a 16-game winning streak.
Yeah, I lost in Knoxville with Florida probably is a prelude to a win for Florida in Rupp Arena. Florida is too good and too polished of a team to drop two in a row, in my opinion.
I'm thinking the same thing. I mean, like I said, the law of averages. I can't see them losing two in a row as much as I can see them maybe getting the win in Knoxville, and then getting their bubble burst in Lexington.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit to, you know, this past week was signing day. The national letter of intent normally is kind of ho-hum for Kentucky football, but was actually pretty exciting.
Great day.
Signing day, I think we could call it a consensus top 15, top 20 recruiting class, which is the best Kentucky has ever had. Mark Stoops and company signed a consensus. We're just going to call it a top 15. It was probably more top 20 when it's all said and done. But fantastic class, full of four stars, full of high-rated three stars, which, you know, it used to be a couple good three stars, no four stars. So Mark Stoops has been doing, you know, God's work on the recruiting trail. I mean, he's been doing the Lord's work when it comes to Kentucky football and the recruiting trail. And it paid off for him because I think a lot of people thought this class would fall apart, that Ohio State and some big 10 teams would pick off these Ohio recruits, but they didn't. I mean, Stoops got these guys to commit, and they stayed committed. And not only that, there wasn't a whole lot of drama. I mean, these guys were faxing in their letters of intent at like 8 in the morning, right when you could. I mean, they had a board filled up with 28 guys. Of course, some of these are early enrollees like Drew Barker and a few of the other guys. But, you know, because you can only sign 25 in a given year. But that being said, fantastic class. They lost one guy, a three-star offensive tackle who ended up going to Florida State. You know, Florida and a lot of the SEC teams didn't know anything about him. Kentucky offers him. And then all of a sudden, they start taking a second look at this kid and realize he's really good and he shouldn't be a three-star. He eventually goes to Florida State. So to lose one kid out of an entire 28, 29-member class, that's unheard of. I mean, there's guys who flip just because on signing day. I mean, Auburn thought they had a top recruit from Auburn, Alabama, even put his bio up on their website, and the kid committed to Alabama that day instead. You know, I don't know if you heard the story about the kid who sent in a letter of intent to Ole Miss, Utah, and a community college. I mean,
yes,
those are binding contracts. Whichever one you send in first, you're supposed to send in one, and that's a contract. But, you know, I think it's going to work out for the kid. So I think it's amazing what Stoops is able to accomplish. You have Matt Elam, who, you know, is rated a five-star in one service. You have Drew Barker, who's an Elite 11 quarterback. You know, a lot of defensive backs, a lot of wide receivers, offensive and defensive line. And I tell you what the best thing for me was is stealing Lloyd Tubman from Seneca High School here in Louisville. From Penn State. I mean, we said weeks ago, James Franklin leaving Vanderbilt was the greatest thing to ever happen to Kentucky football at that point in the process. Maybe Stoops will eventually outweigh that. But him leaving was amazing. And if Franklin's still at Vanderbilt, Tubman goes to Vanderbilt, and we lose a top three guy in the state on the defensive side of the ball to Vanderbilt. Franklin leaves. The kid initially says Penn State, decides he doesn't want to go to Penn State, and Kentucky boxes out Louisville and gets the kid. That's a four-star defensive end. Now, will he start over our two defensive ends we currently have? No. Will he start over Hatcher if Hatcher stays at a defensive end and doesn't move to outside linebacker? Probably not. But you're talking about a kid, by the time he's a junior, he's a raw talent, only been playing for 2 years. He'll be good. He'll be real good. So this is amazing to me. I don't know how you feel about National Signing Day and how things went down, but I'm just astounded by it. I mean, I'm ecstatic.
You cannot sing the praises of this coaching staff enough for what they did this year. I mean, I have gone back and looked at about the last 5 years of Kentucky's recruiting classes, and I'll tell you, besides last year, and I think didn't Stoops and his guys kind of swoop in right at the end last year and sign up a bunch of four-star guys that gave the class last year a big boost?
Yeah, you got Hatcher, you had
right. Did they get Zadarius?
Yes.
Okay. And if you want to go back and just look, I mean, you can go on ESPN and you can go back, you know, several years and look at the class. I mean, Kentucky was lucky to get one four-star guy a year for all of the years that Joker was the head coach, and he was supposed to be such a recruiting guru, you know, during the Rich Brooks era. That was Joker's deal, is he could go down there and get guys like Raphael
Little,
or, yeah, you know, who was
Woodyard, you know, Western Woodyards. Yeah.
Pardon. Yeah. But I mean, compare any of the last six recruiting classes to what they did this week. And I mean, you can't not just be floored by it. I mean, 8 4-star guys in this class.
Unheard
and I think
of.
All eight of them are going to, you know, let's not, you know, as Kentucky fans, let's not get confused and say, oh, we signed all these 4-star guys and think that they're automatically going to be, you know, All-Americans, and are they going to stay for 4 years and all this and that and the other. No, we're just signing good 4-star guys. And if you look down that list of these guys, I mean, these are program building guys. I mean, I am extremely excited about guys like Stanley Williams and this Denzel Ware kid out of Florida who's going to play defensive end, and this Darius West kid who's a corner out of Ohio, Thad Snodgrass, wide receiver out of Ohio. These are all guys that were offered scholarships by everybody. So I think we've got just a lot of program building guys that we signed this week. And I mean, it's, you know, it's impossible not to be excited by it.
One last thing I want to touch on, you know, something Stoops did that Joker did as recruiting coordinator, or maybe Brooks would be more fair since he was head coach. But what Joker couldn't do when he was head coach was Kentucky signed 4 of the top 5 recruits in state. Of course, that would be Matt Elam, in no particular order, Matt Elam, Drew Barker, Lloyd Tubman, kid out of Bowling Green, I can't think of his name, another defensive tackle. And then, of course, the 5th one would be Reggie.
Yeah, Middleton.
Yeah, Middleton. And Reggie Bonifin would be the 5th. Of course, I think Reggie's technically 4th or maybe 3rd on that list. I don't think he's that good. He's a Louisville commit. But to lock down 4 out of the top 5, making sure those guys aren't going to Ohio State or Alabama or USC or Florida, you know, that was what helped Kentucky back then, making sure you got the Jacob Tammies, the Keenan Burtons,
right,
the Corey Peters, stuff like that. So locking those guys down again is essential, and I think that speaks as much as going into Ohio and beating Ohio State and major programs for Ohio recruits. And I tell you what, people are taking notice, because the number one running back in all of America is the kid at Madison Southern in Richmond, who was committed to Michigan and has decommitted now and strongly likes Kentucky. And then Kentucky also offered the number one wide receiver in America the other night, and got enough that the kid actually tweeted about it, that he was blessed that he got a Kentucky offer. And I'm thinking, dude, you're a 5-star. You're the best wide receiver out of Florida, and you think you're happy for – he was. And he's tweeting that little hashtag they got now. Why not? And so the kid from Madison Southern and this wide receiver are tweeting at each other, why don't we go to Kentucky and put them on the map and win a national championship? I don't – understand any scenario where that ever would have happened again. I'm not saying either one of these kids will come to Kentucky, but the fact that they're publicly talking about it at all, it's unheard of.
It just shows the excitement that's around the program right now. And I mean, these kids get to express that in social media these days, where, you know, they didn't really have that option a few years ago. But yeah, it shows the buzz around the program, and Kentucky got a ton of love and hype and positive talk on ESPN all day long. I mean, I watched quite a bit of signing day on ESPNU, and they talked about Kentucky all day. Kentucky was the big surprise of the day to the talking heads on ESPN, until USC made a late run, you know, late in the day, and signed 2 or 3 guys that were, you know, 5-stars. So USC kind of stole UK's thunder towards the end of the day, but all day long it was all about Kentucky.
That's fantastic. Here's the one, I want to say one more thing, and we'll wrap up the show here, Chris. Here's the bad news about the recruiting class. Top 20 class, 9th in the SEC.
Yeah.
So that's where the difference. You're going to have to take these kids, and you're going to have to coach them up. You're going to have to out-coach teams that have recruited better talent than you have. I think Stoops will do that. All in all, you know, I'd rather be a top 20 and be 9th in the SEC than be 14th, like Kentucky generally was. Chris, you got anything else on the table before we wrap up the show this week?
Hoosiers lost a tough one last night, blew a big lead. I think Richard Pitino might just reign over the Big Ten for the next two, three decades, or until his dad tries to get him the Louisville job, whichever one comes first. But, you know, other than that, yeah, IU is in a death spiral. My Ball State Cardinals aren't doing too well either. Controversial Marcus Smart situation last night. I don't know if you wanted to weigh in anything. 3-game suspension has been handed down.
Yeah, here's the thing. The guy says the guy has been a problem at Texas Tech, this fan. All these other players are saying they've said stuff to him. Here's the thing. Smart says that he called him a racial slur. You know, other people who were at the game said that the guy said something along the lines of, go back to Africa. This wow. guy says that he just called him a piece of crap. Now, listen, how many times do you think Marcus Smart has heard that he's a piece of crap from an opposing fan? I don't think that's enough to rile him up to push a guy. He's lucky he didn't slug him and knock him out. It is Texas Tech. I don't think highly of that school at all. You know what? I wasn't there. If I had to take a bet, he probably called him a racial slur or told him to go back to Africa. And I know this is wrong. I know I'm in the minority. But if you tell me that, you know what? I'd tell Marcus Smart to just lay his ass out. I know that's not the right thing to say. You're not supposed to do that with fans. Be the better person. I think it's kind of crap. I mean, you're talking about you're screwing Oklahoma State here. I mean, they have to play Oklahoma, they have to play Baylor, and I think Texas. Those are the 3 games he's going to sit out. Those are all ranked teams, great teams. They're going to have 3 losses because of this, because of some dummy at Texas Tech. Absolute idiot. It's not fair. That guy, there's no ramifications for that guy, and Marcus Smart, a kid, is shouldering all the blame. It's ridiculous.
Well, my take on it is this. Well, I mean, quickly here, let's wrap it up. I like Marcus Smart. I think Marcus Smart is probably the best player that's going to come out of college basketball this year. If I was an NBA guy, I would probably want him on my team. I think he's as ready as anybody. That guy, the fan, is supposedly a Texas Tech super fan, travels thousands of miles a year to go to Texas Tech basketball games. Why on earth you would ever do that, I have no idea. But I don't know. I have a hard time believing that a guy that's that close to the program, that involved with the program, who wants to be at all those Texas Tech games and go to all these away games and travel all over the place, I kind of find it hard to believe that that person is also stupid enough to make a comment like that in such a public setting. I mean, you're using a racial slur against one of the opponents' players, and I mean, you've got all these people around you. I mean, you can't just go around dropping N-bombs these days, and there's going to be somebody around you who's going to be offended. I just have a hard time believing that that guy is that dumb in that situation to get racial. I mean, he said something, and all you got to do is watch the film, and he's saying something right to Marcus Smart's face, and Marcus Smart pushes him. And then the funny thing is that lady who freaks out next to the guy and just starts pointing at Marcus Smart with her mouth just hanging wide open. I don't know if you've seen that part, but it is kind of humorous.
She's like, oh,
but,
my God, he played? Oh, yeah.
I just think it. I think the guy said something to him, and it pissed Marcus Smart off, and he pushed him. And then when he goes back in the huddle and Travis Ford's jumping his ass for getting a technical called on him, Marcus Smart's a 20-year-old kid, and he probably just said, oh, he called me a N-word, you know. And I don't know. I just have a hard time believing that's what happened. But I could be totally wrong.
We'll never know. It's always going to be a he said, she said kind of thing. And unfortunate for Marcus Smart, unfortunate for both universities. You know, it just goes to show that fans need to be policed more than anything else. I mean, I think largely we leave fans blameless in situations. And I appreciate a good rowdy fan as much as anyone else. But you got to draw the line somewhere. I mean, you know, if a player is in the stands, don't say a word to them. Don't. These guys are huge. Don't be an idiot. You know what I'm saying? Don't be an idiot. I think fan comments and how that, you know, the last time UK was handled when they went to Assembly Hall, some of the nasty things that are rumored that were said to the players then, is a large reason why Cal won't go back. But, you know, no one's going to come out and said, oh, you said nasty things to us and we couldn't handle it, you know, because then you're labeled as weak. But unfortunate situation. Well, I think that's it for this week. Thanks again for the O-Line Sports Grill. Thanks again to you, Chris. And I say we just end this as always. Go Cats.
Cats.